as Sally entered Rod's office. She heard him speaking into the phone. He hadn't seen her. For a moment she hesitated, then stood motionless, listening. "I agree, Lavrenti. The asteroid civilization must be covered in the first sweep. It may even be their prime naval base. I do not like to divide fleet," the heavily accented voice said from the phone. "You give me two missions, Lord Blaine. They are not compatible. To fall upon Motis and cripple them without warning. Yes, that is possible. To invite their attack before we react. That will cost lives and ships we cannot spare. You'll plan it that way nonetheless." "Yes, my lord. My officers will bring you preliminary plans in the morning. They will also bring you loss estimates. What officer do you suggest I place in command of decoy vessel, my lord? Classmate of yours? Stranger? I await your suggestions." "Damn it. Please excuse my impertinence, my lord. Your commands will be obeyed." The screen went dark. Rod sat staring at its blank face until Sally came in and sat across from him. The warrior statuettes were vivid behind his eyes. "You heard? Some of it. Is it really that bad?" Rod shrugged. "Depends on what we're up against. It's one thing to go in shooting, blast our way in and saturate the planet and asteroids with hellburners. But to send the fleet in, give the Motis warning of what we're up to, and wait for them to attack us? The first hostile move could be from the laser cannon that launched the probe." She looked at him miserably.
"Why do we have to do it at all? Why can't we just let them alone?
So that one of these days they can come out here and chop up our grandkids?
Why does it have to be us?"
"It was, though. Tell me, Sally, is there any doubt about it? About what the Motis really are?"
"They're not monsters."
"No, just our enemies." She shook her head sadly.
"So what will happen?"
"The fleet goes in. We demand they surrender to the Empire. Maybe they accept, maybe not. If they do, suicide crews go in to supervise the disarmament. If they fight, the fleet attacks."
Who's going to land on Mote Prime? Who will be in charge of the—"
"No, Rod, I can't let you do that." "Who else could it be? Me, Cargill, Sandy Sinclair, MacArthur's old crew will land. Maybe they'll really surrender. Somebody's got to give them that chance."
"Rod, I—"
"Can we have the wedding soon? There's no heir to either of our families."
"No use," said Charlie. "Taste the irony. For millions of years we have been in a bottle. Its shape has shaped our species to our detriment. Now we have found the opening, and now the Navy pours through to burn our worlds."
Jock sneered. "How vivid and poetic are your images. How fortunate we are to enjoy your constructive advice. You—" Charlie stopped suddenly. Jock's walk had turned strange. She paced with her hands twisted uncomfortably behind her, head bent forward, feet close together to render her stance as precarious as a human's. Charlie recognized Kutuzov. She made a peremptory shushing motion to stop Ivan from commenting.
"I need a human word," said Jock. "We never heard it, but they must have it."
"Summon a servant," she snapped in Kutuzov's voice. And Charlie leaped to obey. Senator Fowler sat at a small desk in the office next to the commission conference room. A large bottle of new Aberdeen Highland cream stood on the otherwise bare oak desk. The door opened and Dr. Horvath came in. He stood expectantly.
"Drink?" Fowler asked.
"No, thank you."
"Want to get down to it, eh?"
"Right. Your application for membership on this commission is denied." Horvath stood rigid.
"I see."
"I doubt it. Sit down." Fowler took a glass from the desk drawer and poured.
"Here, hold this anyway. Pretend you're drinking with me."
"Tony, I'm doing you a favor." "I do not see it that way."
"Don't, eh?
Look. The commission's going to exterminate the Motis. Just what's that going to do for you? You want to be part of that decision?"
"Exterminate? But I thought the orders were to bring them into the Empire."
"Sure. Can't do anything else.
Political pressure's too big to just go in and wipe 'em out. So I got to let the Motis draw some blood, including the father of the only heir I'll ever have. Fowler's lips were tightly drawn. They'll fight, Doc. I just hope they don't make a phony surrender offer first, so Rod'll have a chance. You really want to be part of that?
I see. I guess I really do see. Thank you.
You're welcome. Fowler reached into his tunic and took out a small box. He opened it for a second to look inside, closed it, and scaled it across the desk to Horvath. There, that's yours. Dr. Horvath opened it and saw a ring with a large blank green stone. You can carve a baron's crest on that next birthday, Fowler said. Do not bind the mouths and all that. Satisfied?
Yes, very.
Thank you, Senator. No thanks needed. You're a good man, Tony. Okay, let's get in there and see what the Motis want. The conference room was nearly filled. The commissioner's staff, Horvath's scientists, Hardy, Renner, and Admiral Kuchisov. Senator Fowler took his seat. Lords, commissioners representing His Imperial Majesty are now convened. Write your names and organizations. He paused briefly as they scrawled on their computers. The Motis have requested this meeting. They didn't say why. Anybody got anything to bring up before they get here? No? Okay, Kelly, bring them in. The Motis were silent as they took their places at the end of the table. They looked very alien. The human mimicry was gone. The permanent smiles were still painted on, and the fur was combed, sleek and shiny. Your ball, the senator said. I may as well tell you we're unlikely to believe anything you say.
There will be no more lies, Charlie said.
Even the voice was different. The mediator sounded alien, not like a blend of all the voices the Motis had ever heard, but with a distinct... Rod couldn't trace it. Not an accent. It was almost perfection, the ideal of Anglic. The time for lies is finished. My master thought so from the beginning, but Jock's master was given jurisdiction over negotiations with humans, as you were given such jurisdiction for your emperor. Faction fight, eh? Fowler said. Pity we didn't meet your boss. A bit late now, isn't it?
Perhaps. But I will now represent him. You may call him King Peter if you like.
The midshipman did.
What?
Rod stood at his seat, and the chair fell backward to crash to the floor.
When?
Just before they were killed by warriors, Charlie said. Attacking me will gain you no information, my lord. And it was not my master's warriors who killed them. Those who did were ordered to take them alive, but the midshipmen would not surrender. Rod carefully retrieved his chair and sat.
No, Horst wouldn't, he muttered.
Nor would Whitbread, nor Potter. You may be as proud of them as you wish, Lord Blaine. Their last moments were in the finest traditions of the Imperial service. There was no trace of irony in the alien voice.
And just why did you murder those boys?
Sally demanded. Rod, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, that's all.
It wasn't your fault. The lady asked you a question, Charlie.
They had discovered the truth about us. Their landing boats took them to a museum. Not one of the places of amusement that we allowed you to visit. This one has a more serious purpose.
Charlie spoke on in a low voice. She described the museum and the battle there, the flight across Mote Prime, the beginning of the war between Moti factions, and the landing in the street outside the castle. She told of the final battle.
My own warriors lost, she finished. Had they won, King Peter would have sent the midshipmen back to you, but once they were dead, it seemed better to attempt to deceive you.
Lord God, Rod whispered. So that's your secret.
And we had all the clues, but... Someone was murmuring across the room. Chaplain Hardy.
Requiem aeternam donum est, domine et lux perpetui.
Just how the hell do you think telling us this will help you? Senator Fowler asked.
Charlie shrugged. If you're going to exterminate us, you may as well know why. I am trying to explain that the Masters will not surrender. King Peter might, but he doesn't control Mote Prime, much less the asteroid civilization. Someone will fight.
As I predicted, my lords, Kutuzov said heavily, and men and ships sent to accept surrender will be doomed. Perhaps fleet as well. If we enter Mote system, it must be in full attack.
Oh, boy, Senator Fowler muttered.
Yeah, I see your plan. You think we can't order an unprovoked attack, and maybe we won't send in a suicide mission first. Well, you read us wrong, Charlie. It'll mean my head, maybe, but all you've convinced me of is to give the Admiral his way.
Sorry, Father, but that's the way I see it.
The Senator's voice crackled across the room.
Admiral Kutuzov, you will hold your fleet in readiness, and it will accept no communications from any source without my prior approval. And I mean any source. Understood?
Aye, aye, Senator.
Kutuzov raised a communicator to his lips.
Mikhailov, da.
He spoke fluid syllables.
It is done, Senator.
I have not finished, Charlie said. You have another alternative.
And what's that? Fowler demanded.
Blockade.
57. All the skills of treason. They stood for a long time on the balcony outside Rod's suite. Faint sounds of a city after dark floated up to them. The hooded man rose high in the sky, his baleful red eye watching them with indifference. Two human lovers who would send squadrons of ships into the eye itself and keep them there until they too passed away.
It doesn't look very big, Sally murmured.
She moved her head against his shoulder and felt his arms tighten around her.
Just a fleck of yellow in Murkison's eye. Rod, will it work?
The blockade?
Sure.
We worked out the plan at Fleet Battle Ops. Jack Cargill set it up. A squadron inside the eye itself to take advantage of the jump shock. The Motis don't know about that, and their ships won't be under command for minutes at best. If they try to send them through on automatic, it just makes it worse.
She shivered against him. That wasn't really what I meant. The whole plan. Will it work?
What choices have we?
None. And I'm glad you agree. I couldn't live with you if... I couldn't, that's all.
Yeah. And that makes me grateful to the Motis for thinking up this scheme. Because we can't let the Motis get out. A galactic plague. And there are only two remedies for that kind of plague. Quarantine and extermination. At least we've got a choice.
There... She stopped and looked up at him. I'm afraid to talk to you about it, Rod. I couldn't live with myself if we had to... If the blockade won't work.
He didn't say anything. There was a shouted laugh from somewhere beyond the palace grounds. It sounded like children.
They'll get past that squadron in the star, Sally said.
Her voice was tightly controlled.
Sure.
And past the mines Sandy Sinclair's designing, too. But where can they go, Sally? There's only one exit from the eye system. They don't know where it is, and there'll be a battle group waiting for them when they find it. Meanwhile, they've been inside a star. No place to dissipate energy. Probably damaged. There's nothing you can think of that we haven't considered. That blockade's tight. I couldn't approve it otherwise.
She relaxed again and leaned against his chest. His arms encircled her. They watched the hooded man and his imperfect eye.
They won't come out, Rod said.
And they're still trapped. After a million years... What will we be like in a million years, she wondered. Like them? There's something basic we don't understand about Motis. A fatalistic streak I can't even comprehend. After a few failures, they may even just give up.
He shrugged. We'll keep the blockade anyway. Then, in about 50 years, we'll go in and see what things are like. If they've collapsed as thoroughly as Charlie predicts, we can take them into the Empire.
And then what?
I don't know. We'll have to think of something.
Yes.
She drew away from him and turned excitedly.
I know. Rod, we have to really look at the problem. For the Motis, we can help them.
He looked at her wonderingly.
I think the best brains in the Empire are likely to be working on it.
Yes, but for the Empire, not for the Motis. We need an institute. Something controlled by people who know the Motis. Something outside of politics. And we can do it. We're rich enough.
Eh?
We can't spend half of what we have between us.
She dashed past him and into his suite, then through it and across the corridor to her own. Rod followed to see her burrowing among the stacks of wedding gifts that littered the large rose-teak table in her entry hall. She grunted in satisfaction when she found her pocket computer. Now should I be irritated? Rod thought. I think I'd better learn to be happy when she's like this. I'll have a long time to do it. The Motis have been working on their problem a while, he reminded her. She looked up with faint irritation.
Pooh! They don't see things the way we do. Fatalism, remember? And they've had nobody to force them into adopting any solutions they do think up.
She went back to scribbling notes.
We'll need Horowitz, of course. And he says there's a good man on Sparta. We'll have to send for him. Dr. Hardy will want him.
He regarded her with awe and wonder. When you get going, you move. And I better move with you if I'm going to have you around all my life. Wonder what it's like to live with a whirlwind. You'll have Father Hardy if you want him. The Cardinal's assigned him to the Moti problem, and I think His Eminence has something bigger in store. Hardy could have been a bishop long ago, but he doesn't have the normal share of mitrosis. Now I don't think he's got much choice. First apostolic delegate to an alien race or something.
Then the board will be you and me, Dr. Horvath, Father Hardy, and Ivan.
Ivan? But why not? And as long as we're doing this, we may as well do it right. We'll need a good executive director. Sally's no use as an administrator, and I won't have time. Horvath, maybe.
Sally, do you know just how much we're up against? The biology problem? How to turn a female to male without pregnancy or permanent sterility? But even if you find something, how do we get the Motis to use it?
She wasn't really listening.
We'll find a way. We're pretty good at governing.
We can hardly govern a human empire.
But we do, don't we? Somehow.
She pushed a stack of gaily wrapped packages aside to make more room. A large box almost fell, and Rod had to catch it as Sally continued to scrawl notes into her computer's memory bank.
Now, just what's the code for Imperial men and women of science? She asked. There's a man on Meiji who's done some really good work in genetic engineering, and I can't remember his name.
Rod sighed heavily. I'll look him up for you. But there's one condition.
What's that?
She looked up in curiosity. You finish this up by next week, because, Sally, if you take that pocket computer on our honeymoon, I'll throw the goddamn thing into the mass converter. She laughed. But Rod didn't feel reassured at all. Oh, well. The computers weren't expensive. He could buy her a new one when they got back. In fact, maybe he ought to make a deal with Barry. He might need the things in shipload lots if they were ever going to have a family. Horace Barry followed the Marine guards through the palace, pointedly ignoring the other Marines who'd fallen in behind him. His face was calm, and only a close study of his eyes could show the despair that bored through him. As Allah wills, he sighed, and wondered that he no longer resented the thought. Perhaps there would be comfort in submission. There was little else to console him. The Marines had brought his servant and all his baggage down on the landing ship, and then separated him from Nabil at the palace roof. Before they did, Nabil had whispered his message. Jonas Stone's confession was even now reaching the palace. Stone was still on New Chicago. But whatever he had told Naval Intelligence was important enough to be put on a message sloop. Nabil's informant didn't know what the rebel leader had said, but Barry did, as surely as if he could read the coded tapes. The message would be brief, and it would contain death by hanging for Horace Barry. So, this is the end of it all. The Empire acts swiftly against treason. A few days, a few weeks, no more. There is no chance to escape. The Marines are polite, but very alert. They have been warned, and there are many of them, too many. One might accept a bribe, but not when his comrades are watching. As Allah wills, But it is a pity. Had I not been so concerned with the aliens, had I not done the Empire's work with the traders, I would long since have escaped. Levant is large, but I would have had to leave New Scotland, and it is here the decisions will be made. What point to escape when the aliens may destroy us all? The Marine Sergeant conducted him to an ornate conference room, and held open the door until Barry went inside. Then, incredibly, the guards retired. There were only two men in the room with him. "Good morning, my lord," Barry said to Rod Blaine. His words were even and smooth, but his mouth felt dry, and there was a sharp taste in the back of his throat as he bowed to the other man. "I have not been introduced to Senator Fowler, but of course his face is known to everyone in the Empire. Good morning, Senator." Fowler nodded without rising from his seat at the big conference table.
"Good morning, Excellency. Good of you to come. Have a seat, won't you?"
He waved to a place opposite his. "Thank you." Barry took the indicated chair. Then more astonishment as Blaine brought coffee. Barry sniffed carefully and recognized it as a blend he had sent to the palace chef for Blaine's use. "In the name of Allah, they are playing games with me. But to what end?" He felt rage mingled with fear, but no hope at all, and a wild, bubbling laugh rose in his throat.
"Just so we know where we stand, Excellency," Fowler said.
He waved, and Blaine activated a wall screen. The bulky features of Jonas Stone loomed out into the ornately paneled room. There was sweat on the brow and along the cheekbones, and Stone's voice alternately boomed and pleaded. Barry listened impassively, his lip curled in contempt for Stone's weakness. There was no doubt at all. The Navy had more than enough evidence to send him to a traitor's death. Still, the smile did not fade from Barry's lips. He would give them no satisfaction. He would not plead. Eventually, the tape ended. Fowler waved again, and the rebel leader's image vanished.
"Nobody's seen that but the three of us, Excellency," Fowler said carefully.
"But no. What do they want? Is there hope, after all?"
"I don't know that it needs discussing," the senator continued. "Me, I'd rather talk about motis."
"Ah," said Barry. The tiny sound almost stuck in his throat. "And do you wish to deal, or do you taunt me with the final horror?" He swallowed coffee to moisten his tongue before he spoke. "I am sure that the senator is aware of my views. I consider motis the greatest threat humans have ever faced." He looked at the two men opposite him, but there was nothing to be read in their faces.
"We agree," Blaine said.
Quickly, while hope rose in Barry's eyes, Fowler added,
"There's not much question about it. They're locked into a permanent state of population explosion followed by total war. If they ever get out of their system... Barry, they've got a soldier subspecies that puts the Saurons to shame. Hell, you've seen them."
Blaine did things to his pocket computer, and another picture appeared. The time machine sculpture.
"Those?"
"But my moti said they..." Barry stopped himself in realization. Then he laughed, the laugh of a man who has nothing more to lose. "My moti." "Precisely." The senator smiled faintly. "I can't say we have much trust in your moti. Barry, even if it were only the miniatures that got loose, we could lose whole worlds. They breed like bacteria. Nothing big enough to see breeds like that. But you know." "Yes." Barry gathered himself with difficulty. His face smoothed, but behind his eyes was a myriad of glittering tiny eyes. "Splendor of Allah. I almost brought them out myself. Praise and glory to the one who is merciful."
"Damn it, stop shivering," Fowler commanded.
"My apologies. You will doubtless have heard of my encounter with miniatures." He glanced at Blaine and envied his external calm. "Miniatures could be no less unpleasant to the commander of MacArthur. I am pleased to hear that the Empire recognizes the dangers."
"Yeah, we're going to blockade the motis, bottle them up in their own system."
"Would it not be better to exterminate them while we can?" Barry asked quietly.
The voice was calm, but his dark eyes blazed.
How?
Barry nodded.
There would be political difficulties, of course, but I could find men to take an expedition to Moat Prime and, given the proper orders...
Fowler gestured dismissal.
I've got my own agent provocateurs if I need 'em.
Mine would be considerably less valuable.
Barry looked pointedly at Blaine.
Yeah, Fowler said nothing more for a moment, and Blaine stiffened visibly.
Then the senator continued.
Better or worse, traitor? We've decided on the blockade. Government's shaky enough without being accused of genocide. Besides, I don't know as I like the idea of unprovoked attack on intelligent beings. We'll do it this way.
But the threat!
Barry leaned forward, unmindful of the fanatical gleam in his eyes. He knew he was close to madness, but he no longer cared.
Do you think you have locked the gin away because the cork is back in the bottle? What if another generation does not see the motis as we do? What if they let the djinn loose again? Glory of Allah, picture swarms of their ships. They pour into the Empire, each commanded by things that look like that, and think like Admiral Kutuzov, specialized warriors more than the equals of Sauron Death's heads. And you will let them live? I tell you, they must be destroyed.
No. Men are never persuaded simply because they must believe. They will not listen when... Visibly he relaxed.
I see that you have decided. How may I be of assistance? Or do you wish anything of me at all? Is this a game?
I think you already have, Blaine said.
He lifted his coffee and sipped. And I thank you for the gift. Blockade's about the most expensive kind of naval action there is,
Fowler mused.
Never very popular, either.
Ah. Barry felt the tension die within him. They held his life, but they needed him. Perhaps he could keep far more than his life.
You are concerned about the Imperial Traders Association.
Exactly. There was no reading Fowler's expression.
Relief. For this I will build a mosque.
It would make my father gloriously happy, and who knows? Perhaps Allah exists after all. That bubbling laugh was still there in his throat, but he knew that if he began, he would never stop.
I have already pointed out to my colleagues the disadvantages of unrestricted trade with motis. I have had my share of success, although too many traders are like the neighbor who followed Aladdin into the magician's cave. Incalculable wealth glitters more brightly than the dangers.
Yeah, but can you hold 'em?
Find out who intends to sabotage us and squash their schemes?
Barry shrugged.
With some assistance. It will be very expensive. I assume I will have the use of secret funds.
Fowler grinned evilly.
Rod, what else was it Stone said? Something about...
It will not be necessary to bring up that man's ravings, Barry protested. I believe I have sufficient wealth.
He shuddered.
What would he have when this was done?
Fowler wouldn't care if he bled Barry to death.
If there is something that requires resources beyond mine...
We'll discuss it then, Fowler said. There will be, too. For instance, this blockade's going to suck up a lot of resources Merrill thought he'd have for the unification of Trans-Coalsack. Now it seems to me a smart trader might just have a few contacts among the rebels. Might even be able to persuade him to our point of view.
I don't know how that would work, of course.
I see.
Fowler nodded.
Thought you might.
Rod, take that tape, and see it's put in a good, safe place, will you? I doubt if we'll be needing it again.
Yes, sir.
Rod did things to his pocket computer. The machine hummed, a tiny whine that signaled a new kind of life for Horace Barry.
There will be no evasions, Barry thought. Fowler will accept only results, not excuses. And my life will be at stake in this game. It will not be easy to be this man's political agent.
Yet what choice is there?
On Levant I could only wait in fear. At least this way I will know how they are dealing with the motis, and perhaps change their policies as well.
One more thing, the senator said.
He gestured, and Rod Blaine went to the office door. Kevin Renner entered.
It was the first time any of them had seen the sailing master in civilian clothing. Renner had chosen bright plaid trousers and an even brighter tunic. His sash was some silk-like material that looked natural, but probably was synthetic. Soft boots, jewelry. In short, he looked like most of Barry's successful merchant captains. Trader and shipmaster eyed each other wonderingly.